Good evening. I'm Nancy Nangeroni, and this is Gender Talk. Hello again, this is Gender Talk, Boston's worldwide radio show that talks about transgenderism in the first person. Each week we bring you news, information, and exciting new voices that challenge our traditional view of gender. This week we'll cross the Atlantic Ocean and visit with a leading radical activist from Great Britain. Our guest is Kate Moore, publisher of Radical Deviance. Then we'll visit with longtime West Coast trans organizer and writer, Joan Goodnight. She was co-founder of the Powder Puffs of Orange County, one of Southern California's leading clubs for crossdressers, transsexuals, and everyone in between. And unless we get our wires crossed, we'll also have the Twisted Nasty News Question of the Week, happenings around town, and much more tonight on Gender Talk.
What's this wires crossed?
I don't know.
I thought you'd enjoy that. I got to come up with a new one each week, you know, and it's not always easy. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another week of Gender Talk here on WMBR, as well as on JBC Transgender Forum and on our own website, www.gendertalk.com. Thanks, everybody, for all of your support, Transgender Forum and JBC. Let's see. Oh, yeah. And you can send us email. I'll do that later. Let's start out with, we've got a couple of stories. First of all, who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Yeah, wait a minute. Go for it.
Okay, am I loud now?
No, I can't really hear you.
Oh, that's a shock.
How come we can't?
Okay, turn me up.
Or something.
There we go.
You are, Karen.
Oh, yay. I can be heard.
That's always makes you feel good when you know you can be heard. Otherwise, you got to keep shouting and shouting and nobody listens and you're just going to...
Okay.
It's a very zen thing.
Yes.
Okay, to my story.
Please.
After our meeting Saturday,
yeah.
Went around the corner to Albon Pan right near the station, and I'm sitting there with this huge frozen lemonade, and there were these three girls and a boy sitting there. They were putting makeup.
Wait,
on
a boy? And how old was the guy?
They were all, because after I started talking to them, they were all 16 and 17.
Oh, cool. A kid,
yeah.
16, so they're just casually doing this in Albon Pan, right here in our very own city of Cambridge.
Casually doing it. They were all going to a concert of some band I had never heard of. I'm getting so old.
Was it Marilyn Manson or anything like that?
No. Okay. It was some new band I'd never heard of. And they're all from, like, Gardner in the suburbs. He was from New Hampshire, and they're all, like, the girls are all working in their gay straight alliance.
Now, what were they doing? Were they trying to, like, was he trying to pass as a girl or
no.
just having fun or what?
He was just...
They were just all having fun.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Getting ready to go to a concert.
You know, I was born 20 years too soon. At least.
I ran into something in Harvard Square the other day. There was someone who was shopping at the place that I work, and this gentleman, I can't really judge his age, maybe early 20s, but he bald head, full beard, a Indian print skirt and sandals, and it's like, I love Harvard Square.
Ah, that sounds like a radical fairy to me.
Yeah, that was my take. We need a little more of Karen, and you'll probably never hear me say that again.
And, a little more Karen, you got it. And we, Gordine and I went to, my sister called us up Friday, said she had some tickets Friday night for Willie Nelson. And so Gordine and I put on our best...
cowgirl skirts?
That's right. And trucked on over.
Yeah.
And we were quite the sight there, apparently, because a lot of people were, like, giving us the eye. It could have been our arms around each other. It could have been that we were kissing every so often. But, we had some people who were nice and some people who were, like...
Yeah, kind of scowling. There was a little bit of scowling going on. I was happy because I saw Western hats and things that reminded me of home, but it was a little bit red, white, and blue. And it could have been a little more rainbow.
Could have been.
A little more master, Nancy.
Yeah. Okay, you got it. But there we go. Okay, I'm going to be a master. You do what I tell you.
You're such a top.
That wasn't what you meant. Is everything cool now? Are we getting enough feed through there? anyway, the good thing was that there were some people who were very nice, who gave us big smiles,
yeah.
And there were also various same-sex couples who weren't being obvious about being romantically attached, but who were giving us big smiles. So
and came and sat by us, too.
Anyway, Willie Nelson, we hear, is dying of cancer,
yeah.
Or has cancer, so we're very sorry to hear about that.
Who has long braids to his waist, too.
Just like me.
Yeah.
I got braids. Pippi Longstocking, is that what you call me?
Yeah, Gordine's got long braids. You got
Gordine has braids, yeah, that's right.
You've got Pippi Longstocking braids.
Great looking braids.
Speaking of Pippi Longstocking, time for our question of the week. Oh, no, before we do that, we have some, you know, I've got a bunch of stuff here. We're wasting too much time. Here's one listener says, quite coincidentally, I watched Silence of the Lambs before listening to Gender Talk 144. I guess on 144 we must have talked about Silence of the Lambs. Anyway, she says, although the Buffalo Bill character, and I guess that's the trans character in Silence of the Lambs, because I haven't seen it, is portrayed as a trans person, the producers go to great lengths to separate him from the transsexual community. He's portrayed as a psychotically sick individual who doesn't qualify as a transsexual at established gender clinics. As you know, most gender clinics will accept anyone as long as the cash continues to flow.
There is reference to that during the movie. There's much more reference in the book,
yeah.
Where they disassociate Buffalo Bill from a true transsexual.
But yeah, of course, and of course that reifies or what's another word for reify? That sort of pays homage to sort of who's a real transsexual and who isn't. And this is sort of demonizing somebody who's not a real transsexual.
On some levels, but the audiences, I don't think, make the distinction.
No, especially when he tucks and then turns around.
Mm-hmm. Right, when he's dressing. And, yeah, it's very intense.
Anyway, this person goes on to say, I know that any negative portrayal hurts, except, and I guess on the program we must have been saying how terrible Silence of the Lambs is. I didn't even want to watch it when I heard about it, and I still haven't seen it. I know that any negative portrayal hurts acceptance as a whole, but I think that this particular portrayal was not as negative as it could have been. Well, you know, it's sort of like, I just got beat to shit, got shit beat out of me with baseball bats, but at least I didn't die. And was that one of our forbidden words?
Anyway. I think it's up there in the
that was
setup.
Poetry I was reciting, so there's sentimental license. The last 5 years has become a period of tremendous growth in the transgender community. Our portrayal in the media has become increasingly positive. We have to look at our image as a whole and not dwell on everything that might be remotely negative. Your panel on Gender Talk 144 viewed Ted Levine's performance in Silence of the Lambs as a toxic portrayal of trans people. I take a more positive view about Buffalo Bill's hyper-violent actions and exclusion from the trans community. Regards, Cheryl.
Well, Cheryl, I'd like to hear more on there, but I do want to say that the audience that I first viewed the film in were screaming, faggot, kill the faggot, when Buffalo Bill appeared, and I think that that type of hate doesn't do very well, and if someone doesn't know a trans person, they're taking it right off the screen.
Yeah. There's, I think it's great to look at the positive. I mean, that's certainly one of my core philosophies, is not to dwell on the negative, but look to the positive and try to move in that direction. But, you know, you have to point out the negative when you see it, and you have to educate the people who are producing negative to get them to stop.
And also, you've got to, it's too easy to target the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
The big O, the other.
Especially in Hollywood, you know, there's people making movies who just want to make money, and they just want to set somebody up as a bad guy so they can shoot him down and make a movie about
Freebie
it.
Freebie and the Bean?
Oh, I don't see. No, I didn't.
Well, there was
that.
A scene in Freebie and the Bean where, and I forget who stars in it, but one of the good guys is being attacked by this mad cross-dresser in the bathroom.
Oh, God.
The other.
Oh,
one.
Yes, that's a Clint Eastwood movie, isn't it?
No.
Clint Eastwood gets attacked by a cross-dresser in the bathroom, though.
The other ones that get it is, like, the Hare Krishnas. My father saw a movie.
Oh, there's a violent group.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's lazy writing is what it is.
And it's formulaic, too, because we have the homicidal maniac Dressed to Kill, which started out in Psycho. Psycho's re-released now, and what type of images are we doing? I'm not advocating for censorship, Cheryl, in any way, but just careful readings of what sort of messages we're giving.
And it is reasonable for us to critique these people who are set up as villains, and certainly until cross-dressing is not quite so demonized. And transsexual and all.
Well, looking in current film, there were only two portrayals of gay men. One was either the homicidal maniac or the sissy victim. Take your pick.
Yeah.
And when social movements start out, the first thing that we start to do is critique the way that we are portrayed in the media, and that's a way of raising consciousness.
It's also a way of raising our self-esteem.
Exactly.
You know? Anyway, Cheryl, thanks so much for that. good. That was we appreciate that kind of feedback. And here's another person with some feedback. Dear Nancy, I believe Laurie Affant's hairstyle described on Gender Talk 213. Laurie Affant was our Unitarian Universalist minister that was here. Her hairstyle is that which is known as a mullet, M-U-L-L-E-T.
I love that.
It also goes by some other names. Basically, the cut is shorter, sometimes quite short on top and sides, longer, sometimes much longer in the back. Does this sound like what you saw?
I thought a mullet was a fish.
Well, it didn't look fishy to me. It looked she looked terrific. Anyway, best regards, Alex Allen, FTM Hair Queen, who says, P.S. personally, title. I'm into tight and tidy yet ever so stylish clipper cuts.
I thought Laura just had what's the typical dyke cut.
Yeah? I don't know. I don't
shaggy
know what a dyke
on,
cut it.
Shaggy on top.
Short on top and long in the back. Yeah. Yeah, that did seem like kind of, well, I guess, you know, a lot of people do that. Anyway.
I like this closer look. This is great.
We have
thank
another letter. Yeah, thanks for that, Alex. We appreciate it. And from Eric in Camarillo, I'm a 17-year-old FTM, and I've been at a loss for info on fake facial hair. Do you have any advice for what I could use until I get on hormones and my face grows hair properly? Thank you. Eric in Camarillo. Does anybody here know any?
I would say,
advice?
Don't try to do anything fake because it looks fake.
What would you do then?
Nothing. I mean,
if you have a little bit of like white hair on your upper lip, you can always take a mascara and darken it a little bit.
I had some girls one time that came to my sex and gender class, and they had cut the bottom part of their hair out and had applied it with some type of really good glue. They passed really well. I thought they were strangers in my class. I didn't read them until 15 minutes in the class, and just because one was grabbing her crotch so much because her socks were sliding out of her jock strap.
I love it. Yeah, you know what? If there's any guys out there listening who have some good suggestions, send them to us, okay? Send us suggestions. If you know a good way for an FTM, or for anybody who doesn't have as much facial hair as they'd like to have to look good with more facial hair. And, you know, obviously you can go out and buy a fake mustache. So the question is there some other way, you know, that's better that you know of? Let us know. Send an email to nancy@gendertalk.com or gender@aol.com and tell us about it, okay? And we'll read your suggestion on the air.
Well, you can certainly go out and have a custom piece made, just like a lot of people have hair pieces made.
Good point.
Oh, really? For like
sure.
A mustache or a beard
yeah.
or something? That must cost a fortune.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah.
And then the spirit gum all over your upper lip. It gets messy.
Anyway, that does it for our questions. Any other comments? No. All right. Thanks for your questions, everybody. We'd really love to hear from you. Do keep them coming to nancy@gendertalk.com. Question@gendertalk.com. Who shows this anyway? Anyway. And now it's time for
just
that feature we
all
love.
Just and the world revolves.
It's time for Hal Fuller. And
the Gender Talk, Twisted Nasty News for July the 19th, 1999. Okay, you can go away now. There.
Yeah.
Some news from Washington. The House of Representatives on July the 15th approved the Religious Liberty Protection Act, or the RLPA, by a vote of 306 to 118. But the more telling vote was the 234 to 190 rejection of an amendment proposed by Gerald Nadler to ensure that religious rights would not become a license to practice discrimination. So an amendment was suggested, but it was voted out. President Bill Clinton has expressed strong support.
That's bad because the amendment was, well, I guess the amendment maybe makes passage of the NLPA more likely. Less likely.
Less likely.
The fact that they didn't amend it means it's more likely
scary.
To get shot down. It's very scary.
President Clinton has expressed support for the bill and said he wants to work with lawmakers, quote, on clarification of civil rights protection. An earlier version of this bill, which Clinton signed to law in 1993, the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, was struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court for being overly broad and exceeding congressional authority. Basically, gays and lesbians, even though barely mentioned in the House debate, fear that this will be used by people on the religious right. In fact, the religious right is burying... they're going to bury the gay agenda. Sorry.
You know what? This gives... Oh, look at that. If I touch the microphone, it makes a little buzz.
Gosh, Nancy, that's great.
This gives religious beliefs the force of law. This is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
This violates the separation of church and state. This is bad news, a bad idea. No one is saying that the beliefs of transgender people should carry the force of law, or the beliefs of gay and lesbian people should carry the force of law. But what this is saying is that if you happen to have a religious belief, all of a sudden you can invoke the law to get somebody else to cease and desist doing anything that you happen to decide to believe or that your religion decides to set as wrong. And that amounts to somebody else's religion having the power to tell me what to do in instances where I'm not hurting somebody else.
It's
That's
key
wrong.
That you keep that idea in mind, because the courts and the legislature in earlier versions of on this issue opted for a softer version of it. But they were talking about whether American Indians, Native Americans, could use peyote in the religious rituals, which the court said, no, you can't do that. That is not a proper exercise of your religious freedom.
Oh,
but... You know, they're
yep.
coming down on the hard side to say that someone can say, well, I don't want this person working with me, or I don't think this person should have these privileges or rights.
Well, and it's hard to tell the hysteria from the reason on this. I mean, there's people on both sides who are fearful. I mean, the reason the law is being passed is to assuage people's fears or to redress actual hurts that have happened. And on the side of the people who are objecting to this, including us, there's the fear that it will be misused to abridge, to curtail our freedoms, and that would be wrong. And so we want to be really careful. You know, we should pass we should just be passing a lot fewer laws, and we should be doing it much more carefully. And for this law to be going through so quickly is ridiculous.
Also on the religious freedom in Native Americans, I thought there was such a thing as sovereign nation. I just stumped there.
Yes. Yeah, just a little. Anyway.
I think the Seminoles are the only ones that still maintain that. I could be wrong.
Everyone is trying, but the government is getting more and more interfering.
Here's a story from Reno, Nevada. Apparently they are having a youth convention, and they're not calling it a swingers conference. They're calling it the Lifestyles 99 Reno Rendezvous, but basically it's a swingers conference.
Rendezvous.
It's not a swingers conference. It's not a sex conference, according to Robert McGinley, founder of Lifestyles Organization. Workshops include romance on the internet, HIV update, 500 unusual sex practices. There's where we find out the cutting edge of kink. Growing up with kinky parents and sex without guilt. Porn star Ron Jeremy was slated to speak on sex and the law.
This sounds almost as good as Outright. Which is being billed as a conference for meeting people, but never mind.
It's gone over very well. A Reno Hilton official said they'd only had one complaint from two Las Vegas mothers traveling with a gymnastic team of girls aged 10 to 14.
Whoa.
And apparently the presentations, like see-through outfits with string bikini underwear, were parading through the hotel and casino. So some parents got upset.
Interesting.
Huh. You know?
Okay. Here's a story from the United Kingdom, and maybe we'll be talking... with Kate Moore about this. British transsexual Christina Haywood has been approved for sexual reassignment surgery through the National Health Service in England, but her local Sheffield Health Authority told her in writing that she'd have to wait 15 years to receive it. This is according to a report in the Guardian newspaper. Even though her private psychiatrist told the health authority her surgery was a high clinical priority, and a National Health Service psychiatrist affirmed there was no reason not to proceed, the authority in her local region insists that she go through assessment with its own specialist psychiatrist, who has only budgeted hours for one such assessment per year. And there are 14 others in line ahead of her. This is so contrived! People
will do anything rather than pay for an SRS. I mean... You know, it's not that much money. You're gonna spend much more money with all this other stuff.
The Sheffield Health Authority cites balanced use of its limited resources as a reason for giving SRS a low priority, despite an important High Court ruling last year that slammed the Northwest Lancaster Health Authority for failing to recognize SRS as, quote, the proper treatment of a recognized illness. In Britain, the surgery can cost up to £9,000.
You know, the real alternative out there, everybody, is... to create acceptance for a broad spectrum of gender roles. If you do that, you're not going to have to pay for as many surgeries, okay? Because people aren't going to have surgery unless they have to. Surgery is not fun. And most people are going to stay as far away from it as they possibly can. So if you just make it a little bit more comfortable for people to exist socially in genders which aren't one of your, the two choices that you're offering now, then you won't have to pay for as many surgeries.
Well, here's a novel idea. Mm-hmm. Telling people that they're mentally ill often makes them sick.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. Yes. Yes. Stigmatizing cross-dressing. Guess what that does to the self-esteem of cross-dressers, you know?
And
people have always cross-dressed. Stigmatizing it doesn't help.
Yeah. Okay, here's a story from Tampa, Florida. A city zoning board has voted to pull the plug on Tampa's internet, quote, voyeur dorm, which I visited the other day, strange little thing, which offers around-the-clock live television pictures of six young women. The college students identified on the website as Alex, Amber, Mila, Robin, Tamara, and Trixie live in a house in Tampa equipped with 34 television cameras.
Yeah, this is like
it's a pay-per site.
Yeah, this is like that MTV show, that Real Life.
Real Life.
Whatever it was, Real Life.
Yeah. Yep.
And now, except now you've got college co-eds that you can watch now.
Yep. And apparently the college co-eds are not terribly concerned that the cameras are always rolling. So they do what they would normally do, undress, go to the bathroom, have sex with their significant others.
And they watch every detail.
For $34 a month, you can.
I
don't know how you switch the cameras, but I wouldn't get to pay $34 to find out.
Yeah, the cameras put out a stream, and you can pick from a stream.
That's a little mondo bizarre. We were talking to a friend just last Thursday who said she had a daughter that was 13 years old who said to her, Mom, all these guys in their 40s and everything, won't take their eyes off of me, and it's really driving me crazy. So the daughter made a sign, and she said, quit staring at me. I'm only 13 years old.
And this is something she while she was riding in the car, she would hold up and
she held it up because she was really getting sick of being
13-year-old. This is the environment, folks. This is
how can we expect to love one another when we objectify the hell out of each other?
I think one of the problems that conservatives or the religious right has when they attack things like transgenderism and cross-dressing is they think that we support that kind of stuff with respect to the way that young girls are treated in this culture, and we absolutely do not.
Good point.
I think at the heart of a lot of discrimination based on sexual orientation or gender identity is the thought by a lot of people that more people are getting more sex than they are, and it upsets them.
Exactly. Well, and of course it creates a tremendous demand because everybody has to try and everybody has to get more sex because they're not getting as much as their neighbor
as they fantasize
somebody else's. Yeah, exactly.
It's greener on the other side of the fence.
Well, this is all that media thing.
Here's a story from Denmark. Two transgendered people legally married each other in Copenhagen, Denmark, on July the 11th, believed to be the first such British couple to do so, the tabloid News of the World reported. Each had been previously married in their birth genders. Both had undergone male-to-female. Janine had undergone male-to-female sex reassignment. David Willis underwent hormone treatment, double mastectomy, and hysterectomy. So essentially you had an M to F marrying an F to M. Janine told the inquiring reporter, making love does not feature in a big way in our lives. It is a mental thing as well as physical anyway.
So
there.
That's one of the sad things about doing that whole surgical stuff is, a lot of time, once you've had a surgery on something, I've had a dozen surgeries, and I've got a lot of scars to show for it, and at every scar is a site of discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
So surgery on your genitals is something to be considered very carefully. I'm not saying that it has to be a site of discomfort, because it isn't. There's a lot of transsexuals out there who are very pleased with their new genitals, and the genitals do work, and there's some doctors out there doing some wonderful work, but you've got to be careful, because probably 6 out of 10 or more are not doing great work.
Yeah.
And, maybe a doctor does great work 90% of the time, but, you might be one of those 10%. You've got to be careful.
Also, a lot of the surgery that's going on right now is of an experimental nature. They're trying things to see if something works better than the last one they did.
Yeah, exactly. So. Well, it's all a big,
So
I don't know what to think about that.
If you want to be a guinea person, right. Okay, here's the final story, the moment you've all been waiting for. It's from London. According to New Scientist magazine, cuttlefish, the cousins of octopus and squid, resort to a cunning tactic to woo females. They dress in drag.
Wow.
Ah!
fish?
Cuttlefish.
Fish don't dress.
Wait a minute. Yes, they do. It's in a matter of speaking. Australian researchers know that small male cuttlefish disguised as females often tag along with breeding couples during the mating season on rocky reefs in South Australia. They adopt the female body color and pattern, and while their bigger male trivials are fending off other suitors, they zoom in and say, it's just a dress, dear. Now remember, cuttlefish, like their cousins, the squids, can alter their body color and their patterns. They use it for camouflage.
Yeah.
Love it.
Now, I don't know if there's a human equivalent where you can go into a singles bar and go and say, ignore the dress, dear. It still works.
Or do you like my dress?
I love it. And by the way, is it next week we're going to have Bruce Bagnell?
Right.
The author of Biological Exuberance, which is the book that talks about homosexuality and other arrangements in sexuality in the Wild Kingdom. So we'll be talking about this very topic next week.
So maybe there is sort of a fish theme going on tonight. We had Laurie's mullet hairdo. So we'll cuddle up. And that's it for this edition of the Gender Talk Twisted Nasty News. Take only as directed.
And in case you're wondering, you're listening to Gender Talk on WMBR in Cambridge, 88.1 FM, first on your dial. And let's see, our first guest tonight is a transsexual activist and publisher of Radical Deviant. She lives in the UK and in Great Britain. Her name is Kate Moore. Kate, can you hear us?
I can, yes. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear
really
you just fine. Can you hear us okay?
Great, yeah. You're a little faint, but that's not a problem.
Well, you know, I was feeling good before, but then I must have eaten too much or something.
She's a bit pale, dear.
Welcome to Gender Talk.
It's nice to talk to people over there.
Yeah.
Or over, wherever we are.
Yeah, there isn't that much communication across the ocean, is there?
I think one or two people, Stephen Whistle goes over to Texas and talks to various legal people over there. But, I mean, that's about it, I think.
That's where I met Stephen, yeah.
Have you been over here, Kate?
I've never been over, no. I've been to almost every other continent, but not North America. So.
All right.
Sadly, I have to imagine what it's like over there, which is it's probably more interesting than actually being there. Really. maybe I shouldn't say that.
It's often the fantasy banner, isn't it?
Well, you know, it's a big place. There's just about everything over here. Whatever it is you're fantasizing, you probably can find at some point.
I have this vision of it sort of being written by all these German films, you know, like sort of Wim Wenders films and things, and it's just like, I have a sort of German vision of America, which is quite sort of strange and rather eccentric.
Interesting.
Well, America is strange and eccentric, and you know, when you look at it from a distance, it looks very kind of milquetoast. Everybody lives in a suburb or works in the city and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you start looking closer, and you start peeling away the layers, it's definitely very eclectic.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, let's talk about some transgender stuff. What do you say? After all, that's why you're on, and we do have limited time, but we got a while here.
Sure.
Kate, so you sent us an email that was talking about some of the stuff you've done, and it sounded like recently you went through like a really nasty row at Cambridge University, is that right?
Right, yeah, absolutely.
What was that all about?
Right, I mean, that was quite unpleasant. What happened was that I'd been working on with transsexual sex workers, and then that led into work with TSs in prison.
Oh, I want to talk about that work.
Okay.
Yeah.
There were all sorts of problems that people were facing, getting treatment if they wanted surgery and those sort of things, being, a few cases of people being raped, people being sort of beaten up on, and people for their own protection being placed in isolation, for instance,
in prisons?
Sorry?
You mean in prisons?
In prison, yeah, absolutely. And a particular problem for lifers, because obviously, I don't know what the system is in the States, but here we have something called a lifer's tariff, which means that somebody has to jump through a number of hoops before they're allowed to be considered to be released, paroled, or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of those for TS people who've committed serious crimes and so on.
Uh-huh.
Is usually sorting out their gender problems. Now, legally...
In other words, before they... A transgender person, someone who has gender that's non-standard, in order to be considered for parole, they have to conform to prescribe gender standards? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Well, you have to remember that we don't have transgender in the... I mean, we don't have the sort of post-identity ideas of transgender that you have in the States. We have a very much more sort of straight transsexual...
You're either a cross-dresser or you're a transsexual and you have to prove which one you are.
You have
and get
to,
official sanctions.
It's, all, it's all fitted into little boxes, and it's very unfortunate, really. You know how I guess 10 years ago in the States you had all that problem of transsexual politics,
yeah.
identity politics, and transgender politics, mm-hmm. the two fighting each other and groups.
Yeah, Johns Hopkins tried to put us in little boxes.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Johns Hopkins University Medical Center tried to put us into little boxes.
Right,
Some broke out and liberated the rest of us.
That sounds fun.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, I mean, there were serious problems with this life as tariff. And one of the things was that you had to have surgery to be able to be considered to be released.
You had to have surgery?
If you identified as transsexual,
yeah.
you had to have surgery. And that meant that, you know, not only did you end up having to be castrated to get civil rights, but you also had to be allowed the surgery in the first place. And you can only get it on the National Health Service here, which is,
sure.
you know, free, but you have to jump through all the hoops.
Right.
And you weren't allowed to do life, real life tests, all of these sort of things that people were supposed to do. So... Mm-hmm.
Basically, life meant life for
the transsexuals in prison.
Life meant life without parole. Then, in other words, instead of parole in 15 years, they would end up there the rest of their lives because they couldn't. They were blocked by the process from conforming to the gender requirements, essentially, for them to get out.
Absolutely.
That's incredible. Now, have you written about that?
I have written. I wrote a report for the prison service on that.
Wonderful.
I also gave a talk to the Parliamentary Forum on Transsexualism, and mm-hmm. And this was what my work in Cambridge was, doing a follow-up study to the report that I did for the prison service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And unfortunately, I went to Cambridge as just as a visiting scholar. I mean, they were paying expenses and things.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
And, you know, hoping to get a really serious piece of work out of it, you know.
Sure.
Yeah.
We had 21, probably 25 TSs in the study, which would have been the biggest that you know, there's been as far as we know.
Now, this study is of transsexuals in prison?
Transsexuals in prison.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And
it's an important subject in this country, by the way. There are people working on it, but we don't have anywhere near this level of organization, mm-hmm. as far as I know.
Right.
Great.
It's a smaller country. It's easier when everything's not divided up into states, I guess.
Maybe, yeah. Anyway, please continue.
Anyway,
yeah.
Anyway, what happened was that the right-wing people who led the Home Office here, that's the people who run prison service in effect, decided that I'd been going around rabble-rousing in prison because a number of my prisoners took a civil rights court case. And they all use the same lawyer, which just happened to be the lawyer that we use.
Just happened to be. Well, you are a rabble rouser then.
So anyway,
good
they
for
refused
you.
To let
Very
me
good.
In the prison.
They what? I'm sorry?
They refused to let me into the prisons.
Oh.
Whoa. So now were you able to, weren't able to conclude?
My project was suspended, and I was suspended. I thought that really Cambridge had done the dirty on me.
How long ago was this?
Sorry?
How long ago was this?
This was February last year or the year before, I must admit.
So it's been a while.
I've taken a long time out. So
this is total, this is like, you know, total political baloney. I mean, this is like serious bad behavior.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's amazing.
It's incredible, isn't it? I mean, I wouldn't have believed it. But then if you think about Cambridge's position, I mean, a third of their research projects at the Institute of Criminology were in prison. If the prison service decided to get stroppy, it could just say, right, no more research. I mean, that's a third of their funding gone.
So Cambridge,
they sort of decided to kick up a fuss.
Now, why did they... Okay, they kicked up a fuss about you because your prisoners were poorly behaved after you. Now, what if... do those prisoners have active suits right now?
Partly because I've been told to keep out of it, I've kept out of it.
Well, okay.
So I honestly don't know what's going on. Certainly one of the prisoners, I mean, this was before, in fact, it was 2 years ago.
Because it sounds like the prisoners might be shooting themselves in the foot. I don't know.
Well, what happened was that 2 years ago, a new left-wing government came in, a center-left government.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And the new government allowed certainly one prisoner who'd been waiting for a very, very long time and been behaving very well to get gender reassignment surgery.
Oh.
So that was the break in the sort of wall of control. So
so that's good.
You know, that's an important move.
So does it look like that'll lead to other prisoners getting their surgeries? So that
I think it's going to be used as a way of controlling the prisoners. Frankly, I mean, if you behave well, this prisoner actually was very badly behaved for a long time and kept being moved on. So that she had to, each time she went to a new prison, had to reestablish her claim for surgery and for being a transsexual. And then what happened was that they just gave in because it was just, you know, she'd been moved around so much. And they said, if you behave yourself, we'll consider you. And actually, she behaved herself for a long time. And they have, you know, with the new regime, have considered her. So
and
that's
she wanted
good, but
surgery.
I'm sure that,
yeah.
you know, new prisoners are going to have the same problem.
Kate, do you know anything about the Christina Hayward case? We just had a news story that said she was approved for surgery, but it's going to have to wait 15 years or something like that. Is this
Where's
part
that?
Of the same? Wasn't it in the UK?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Sheffield Health Authority, essentially to say, you can't really do this, told her that she would have to wait in line. Their state-supported psychiatrist only allocated one visit per year, and there were 14 others ahead of her.
Oh, my
okay.
God.
That sounds wonderful.
You have a
wonderful sort of information service going on in the background here.
Yeah, we're not as good as GAIN, the Gender Advocacy and Information Network, for sure, because they're the ones who really circulate it here in the States and have a very good news service, if you're not aware of it. But we do our best.
I don't think that was in prison. I think I would have known about
right,
it
no,
in prison. I think that's
okay.
just an NHS case. And the important thing there was, I mean, we used to run a support line or an advice line.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to get, regularly, we would get people saying, ringing up saying, our local health service is refusing to fund our surgery. And in the UK, this is standard. Everyone has to have, you know, has their surgery funded, their genital surgery.
Oh.
At least M2Fs. So, you know, what was happening was that each regional authority, when it was privatized, was saying, no, we don't do this. You know, this has never been done before, blah, blah, you know, all sorts of misinformation. And so what would happen is we would take people to lawyers who would then, you know, write letters saying that they would take the authority to court. And they wouldn't get a test case. And what's happened is that this case that you were talking about is actually a test case, which has shown that TSs have a right to the surgery. I've forgotten the actual name of the person, but I do remember.
It certainly speaks to the danger of privatization of medical care, because if it becomes private, then it's in the hands of individuals to make the decisions about what gets covered and what doesn't. Whereas if it's public service, Although I guess it's still in the hands of individuals to make a decision about what does and doesn't. All right, never mind. They're always not a good comment to say, never mind.
Well, I think it works both ways. I mean, if there's a blanket ban on for the NHS on TSs getting surgery, then that's irrevocable. Yeah. You know, that's you know, in terms of funding. I mean, you could get it privately, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So I mean, in a way, it's not that bad a comment.
So are you still trying to do prison work, or are you just kind of, you know, off just sort of keeping yourself informed but not able to do anything?
Right. I mean, I think I felt that there was a bit of fuss about this stuff. The we felt that there was a leak. I mean, I don't know if this is real or not, but we felt there was a leak of the report that I did for the prison service to one of the less salubrious newspapers. It wasn't a very good piece of publicity for the prison.
It was a bad article.
In prison. So, I mean, what we decided was that it was best given that the first sort of case had been successful, you know, we'd had somebody getting surgery.
Yep.
The less fuss we made, or the less fuss I made, you know, we haven't given up the
well, that's good of you
business,
to...
but.
It's good of you, Kate, not to be invested personally and not to get all, you know, upset about your personal sort of responsibility or image, you know, kind of thing where, you know, oh, I have to do this because I have to be a big-time prison activist, but rather to say, take a back step back and say, you know, the best thing to do is for me to back off here a little bit, and that's great.
I have to say, we started taking a court case against Cambridge and just organizing the papers and all the discussions about how it would work were just enough to make me feel, no, this is bad news. I'm getting bad vibes here. I'm getting out. So.
Good that you went with your feelings on that.
I think it probably was. It would have been one of those things which would have dragged on forever, and it would have led to sort of, you know, irrecuperable burnout or whatever.
Right, exactly.
Your energy up.
And it's not clear, you know, it's not clear that things like that produce any good. You know, it's not clear that they really produce good because they create so much distress in so many people.
Mm.
You
and
know?
Yet sometimes you have to fight depending on each individual case.
Well, exactly,
case,
exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
oh.
And you got to learn to judge, to differentiate between the two situations, right? The winnable fight, you know, the fight you can win, you fight. And if you can't win, you know, you're better off not fighting and putting your energies into something you can win.
Well, you look
win.
At the stakes, too, and see what's involved. Yeah. Kate, you're also doing some work on HIV.
Sure.
And as I understand, in England, some of the work that the Gender and Sexuality Alliance did was some of the first time that it was worldwide publicity for HIV information about transsexuals.
Okay.
What's going on there?
Right. Okay. Well, this is again a project that we started. I think it was in. End of 94, beginning of 95, but I may be wrong. No, it was 95. We did a 10-month pilot, which was funded by the local council. We did outreach, basically. We produced HIV leaflets. We targeted sex workers, HIV, transgender sex workers. We were funded in Cleveland, but we also went up to the surrounding big towns, which were Newcastle and Leeds, and did sort of, you know...
Were these leaflets like telling people how to prevent HIV? Because here in the States, one of the things that is just happening is our Center for Disease Control is just starting to realize that there's a huge incidence of HIV among the tranny population, and they're just starting to produce some pamphlets for the first time.
Right, yeah. Okay. I mean, certainly we did an HIV leaflet in I think it was May 95.
That's right. Okay.
And that's on our website. If you want the website details, that's member.aol.com/GNSA. So that's America Online, and that's GNSA is Gender and Sexuality.
Right. We'll put a link to that from our site.
Great.
From the show page.
Anyway, so the HIV leaflet is on that. It's also in this book that is coming out on August the 12th.
Oh, tell us about
the book. What's
well,
the
let,
book?
Let me just, I, now we're talking about HIV, let me just sort of say something about
HIV. No, who do you think you are anyway?
It is actually, I mean, we actually didn't start this stuff. You know, there were two groups at least that were doing HIV before us. There was one in Vancouver, and there was also one in France.
Oh.
Now, the Vancouver did a pilot study, which was really interesting. They had 40 male-to-female street-involved TSs, and you know, this was a sort of formal thing that was a study that was put towards an HIV conference about 5-6 years ago, and they discovered that there were reporting severe social difficulties. Just read you a little thing, including homelessness, discrimination, rejection by others, physical abuse, racism, homophobia, and sexism. Mm. 85% practiced unprotected receptive anal intercourse.
Oh,
90% were involved with prostitution.
Wow.
And 62% were involved with injection drug use with needle sharing.
Oh, that's intense.
Of the 28 who had had an HIV antibody test, 14, that was half of them, were reactive.
Oh.
So that's really, you know, that is a serious piece of bad news on the HIV front. In the UK, it's very different, and so we didn't actually try and do anything other than an information campaign. If we tried to do something a bit different, then it would, you know, we would actually have had to find numbers of people who had HIV that we could have used, and to do that, we wouldn't have been able to target transgender sex workers specifically, because in the UK there just isn't that level of problem.
Right.
It's okay.
There is in Australia as well.
Now, are you still working on HIV issues now? Is there still work?
Okay. No. I'm afraid I do have a tendency of moving on. I'm afraid HIV in the UK is there is just no funding anymore. What's happened is because combination therapies are now have been proved to be quite successful at inhibiting the
Right, which is going on here, but I think the point that was so interesting is that this was so early that you all were finding that out, which is great.
Right, yeah.
Tell us, Kay, what you're working on now. I want to hear what you're working on now.
Okay. Well, we're doing... I was actually asked to take a research... To do some serious research, because one thing we've discovered, or we think we've discovered, is that actually transgender politics don't work in a bottom-up, grassroots way. Mm-hmm. They seem to be working in a top-down way. What happens is that people read sort of kinky avant-garde sort of, you know, stuff produced by theorists or whatever.
You mean like radical deviants?
Through to people like filmmakers, and the filmmakers are actually producing sort of films like The Crying Game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how we had that boom in transgender a few years ago, two, three years ago.
Yeah.
So images what we're trying everywhere. To do is we've switched.
I don't know if I'd credit the movie with creating the boom.
No, I don't mean, you know, I mean there were several movies and you know, I don't mean that. I mean, we had
we certainly had people talking about it.
We had, I mean, there was a year when I was asked to do 5 book contracts. I mean, that was publishers coming to me, not the other way around. I mean, that's almost unheard of. So that was, you know, I didn't take them all, I have to say. so what we're doing is we felt that the most important area to actually work on was actually theorizing transgender in really interesting new ways. And so what we've done is we looked at the current scene, and we realized that actually most stuff comes from Butler and queer and all of that stuff, you know, queer theory.
Yeah.
And so we looked at...
Talking about the identity stuff that talks about construction of identity and all.
Sure.
Yeah.
Post-identity stuff.
And so what we felt was that a number of the things that Butler was saying were actually coming from Kristeva. She attacks Kristeva.
Who's Kristeva? We're talking about Judith Butler, who's the author of Gender Trouble.
That's right, network. Absolutely.
And who's this
yeah.
other person?
What's
her name?
Kristeva.
Julia Kristeva.
Yeah.
Julia Kristeva was one of the pupils of Lacan, who was a heavy-duty French theorist, and one of the people that sort of led the... he did some very serious theorizing of gender in the 1950s,
yeah.
and in fact he was one of the first people to theorize transsexuality
before
people like Stoller.
Right.
Yeah?
Right.
But I mean, you know,
those of us who haven't studied this, the names really don't mean much.
I'm getting all excited over here.
I know.
Stoller was a very, very weird version of an ego psychologist, and that's somebody who I want to use the word foregrounds, but I can't think of an alternative.
Can we talk about the actual ideas about gender? Rather than sort of who did it, kind of let's like what it where I mean, do you want to talk about, you know, what is, to me it seems like gender is something that varies from individual to individual, and while you can say that, you know, this, that you can group and categorize people by gender, at the same time it's a thing that everybody is different, and so any category when it's imposed as stereotype becomes stigmatizing for people who don't match that category, and that's the fundamental problem that we have with gender.
Okay, I mean, what people will be saying with that is that, I mean, that's a pretty good sort of starting position. I mean, what people would say is that actually categories aren't that simple. Categories actually produce desire as well. As soon as you, Lacan has this phrase, the nom du père is the non du père. The name of the father is the no of the father.
Yeah.
And what he's saying there is that as soon as you produce a category, as soon as you cut somebody off from, pigeonhole them, they want to get out of that pigeonhole.
Right. Or
so,
as soon as you create...
there is a relationship between desire and and this.
And once you publicize surgery, once you publicize Christine Jorgensen, then you also have people who know that it's possible who are going to demand it.
I missed some of that.
Once you publicize the fact that someone has sex change surgery, that also creates a desire for it in people who might not have thought it was possible before. Once they see it's possible, then they say, oh, I can do that. And then that helps create the demand. So that's a kind of category creation and creation of desire as well.
Okay, yeah. I mean, that's certainly, I mean, Lacan has this way of putting everything into language, and certainly he would say that it's actually the use of language, the words that are the important thing there, not the technology of surgery. He would say that...
No. I mean, it was the publication of the fact,
sure,
and not
absolutely.
The fact that people know that such a thing is possible.
Absolutely, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry, go ahead, continue, please.
So,
I'm sorry.
Anyway, what we decided was that one of the most important things to do was to... There are a number of very serious attacks on transgender, on transsexuality, in fact.
Yes.
The two most important, most well-known ones are Janice Raymond's Transsexual Empire, which is actually not that difficult to rebut.
Right.
And the other one, which is not a particularly good, certainly not a very good translation, but not a particularly good it's not a very good academic text anyway, is Milo's Horsex.
Right.
And Milo's Horsex comes from Lacan's work on trans. And no one actually has dealt with the Lacan. It is very, very, very complex, difficult stuff. And a lot of it hasn't been published. A lot of it hasn't been translated into English. And so what I'm doing at the moment, my project is that very, very plodding stuff of translating it into English, of trying to organize so that it's published, of, you know, dealing with all of this material, trying to rebut it, and basically GNSA has said, well, look, you're in danger of burnout. If you carry on doing this high-profile stuff, it's going to be dangerous, not only for you, but for the people you're working with. So you need to sort of step back and actually do some of this really, really important research work, and look at the top-down stuff. You know, if we can make this if we can make trans theory really important and popular, then we can have every academic doing gender, doing women's studies,
teaching
throughout the country,
courses.
Throughout the world,
yeah.
looking at transsexuality seriously, transgender seriously.
And students turning on to it.
That will have such a knock-on effect.
Absolutely.
I mean, one of the things that people have felt is that gender trouble actually, very few of its ideas were actually new.
Right.
But, I mean, it managed to package them in a way which people felt was really, really got people excited.
Which got people in feminist theory classes looking at the whole trans issue, which turned students onto the idea of gender diversity. I taught a couple trans theory courses at the University of New Mexico, and for students to hear this was really important. So this book, Kate, tell us about it and tell us publication date.
And Kate, we're down to just a couple of minutes, unfortunately.
Yeah. Okay.
Although I'd like to go on.
there were two books,
okay.
Right? The book that was 3 years ago, but
I remember that
the
book.
Reclaiming Genders book, which is the full title is Reclaiming Genders, Transsexual Grammars at the Fantasy Ecla. The publishers Castle decided that maybe the first book of the two had to be a transsexual book, and then we can move on to transgender and try and infuse the new politics. The new sort of,
right.
I mean, it's 1990 gender trouble, the 1990 politics into the UK with, you know, use of words like transgender. So that book is Reclaiming Genders, has got some really, I think it's got some really, really important people producing work in it. Susan Stryker from the States, really well known. Judith Butler is in it, Henry Rubin, Gore Dean, who's, I guess, sitting next to you.
That's
I can't
right.
see.
<I'm> right <here.
laughs> there are activists like, let me think, who's James Green, Stephen Whittle.
Sounds like a great collection.
People like myself and Diane Morgan, who edit Reclaiming Gender.
When's it going to be out?
Edit Radical Deviance.
Okay, when's it going to be out and what's it
called? It's going to be out on the 12th of August, supposedly. We've heard this a few times before, but I think probably is going to be out on the 12th of August.
And what's it called? What's it called?
It's called Reclaiming Genders.
Oh, that's the new book.
The Fantasy Ecla. Sorry?
I thought Reclaiming Genders was the first book.
That is the first book. The second book hasn't been published yet, and isn't going to be published for a while.
I see. I'm sorry. I thought there was a previous. Okay, never mind.
Reclaiming Genders is.
Okay.
I think it's an important book because it's the first sort of standalone text apart from, you know, I mean, there is this GLQ issue, which was very good that Susan Stryker did in the States.
Right.
But I mean, it's the first. Attempt to collect together what the transgender communities as a plurality are actually saying. So, you know, we've had monographs before, we've had single, you know, we've had Kate Bornstein and people doing really, really sort of important pioneer work.
Yes.
We haven't collected together a group of people who've actually said that, at least in the UK. I mean, I don't, maybe things like that have been done in the States.
It was a gender blending, I think, from the proceedings from the conference in Northridge in 1995.
Okay.
A lot of voices from the community. It's a very diverse publication. It's got a lot of good stuff in there. But that's a while. It's been a while since that. I mean, we need
I have to say, I mean, I was expecting this to be out 2 years ago. So
me too, Kate.
I think everyone was expecting it to be out 2 years ago. So,
Kate,
thank
you so much. We have to go.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Bye.
Thank you.
Great to talk to you. Listen, good luck with Lacan, and we'll have to chat about this more at some point, okay?
We will. It would be great.
Sounds great, okay?
Yeah. You take care.
You too, Kate.
You too. Thanks so much.
Bye now.
All right. Bye.
All right.
Wow.
Terrific, huh?
She's undertaking important work.
Okay. Do we have our announcements? We ready to go with our announcements?
I think that we are.
All right. Start us off, if you would.
Okay. This is what's happening for the week of July 19th. there's going to be a workshop on sexuality, culture, and family. And the film Fire will be shown. There's going to be a group discussion with issues about Asian sexuality. This will be Thursday, July 22nd, 6 to 9 p.m., sponsored by Arbor Counseling Services in collaboration with A Slice of Rice. And this will be at the Arbor Counseling Services. For information, contact Betty Chan at moygan2@aol.com. Okay, and on July 23rd through 25th, there'll be the Falcon Ridge Folk Festival. This is small and very gay friendly. It's in New York State, close to the Massachusetts and Connecticut border. There'll be dancing all weekend, activities for the kids, and among this year's performers are Annie DeFranco, Farron, Karen Savaka, and much more. And you can call 860-350-7472 for more information. It sounds like fun. Okay, here we go. Fetish Fair Flea Market, Saturday, July 24th from 12 noon to 5 p.m. at the Boston Center for the Arts Cyclorama. And you can check out the website at www.nla-newengland.org and then /fff.html. And that's on Saturday, July 24th. On July 25th, Sunday, is Mistress Midori series of sensual SM seminars. And Mistress Midori is known as San Francisco's fetish diva. And she's going to hold sexy workshops at grand openings. And the first will be advanced rope bondage demo at 2 and 4 p.m. And then she's going to have advanced SM techniques from 6 to 8 p.m. This is open to all. Call grand opening at 617-731-2626. I'm feeling weird. I'm sitting here in my black leather jacket, my black leather vest. Oh,
now,
no.
Why would you be feeling weird?
Well, go ahead, Karen. You take it over.
Okay, I'll finish it.
Okay, honey.
It took me a long time because you gave me the wrong phone number.
Oh.
For the our guest.
Oh, well,
I ended
that's
up
typical.
Calling the Phillips, and they knew the number.
Oh, that's right. I never did change that number on that.
Resourceful of you.
Okay, now, we have the Amazon Slam, which is an all-woman poetry slam with host Ren Gender on Sunday, July 25th at 7:30 p.m. 7 p.m. sign-up at Ryle's, 212 Hampshire Street, Inman Square in Cambridge. Phone is 617-876-9330. Should I do the next one? Okay. We have a PFLAG meeting, which is Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, and a meeting Monday, July 26th from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. at the Fenway Community Health Center. And for info, call 617-547-2440. Okay, Nancy, hit it.
And there's also a play called Tomboy, which is, it says initially, about the butch femme subculture of the 50s in Texas. It's going to be playing in Boston, here in Boston, at the Boston Playwrights Theater on Thursday, August 19th and Friday, August 20th. These are free programs. This is the special showings of this, which is available. You just have to make a phone call to 617-358-0751 or email Jessica M. at bu.edu. And it should be good.
And that
I don't know anything about it, though.
That does it for our announcements, and Hal is waving a card at us.
Oh, okay. Shall we do a special message?
Yes, yes.
Take it away.
Alice Martin can't leave the house until she's checked the locks 31 times. Bob Armstrong never knows when he'll have another panic attack, but when he does, he's afraid he'll die. Sally Walters can't go to the mall or even the grocery store. She's deathly afraid of crowds. And ever since she was assaulted 3 years ago, Marie Adams has nightmares, flashbacks, and feels like she can trust no one. More than 23 million Americans suffer from anxiety disorders. They live with intense, unrelenting fear, worry, dread, uncontrollable thoughts, or compulsive behaviors. But they don't have to. Research on the brain and behavior is giving us new insights into these disorders and new treatments. Call 1-888-ANXIETY for the latest information and get your life back. A public service message from the National Institute of Mental Health.
All right. And now it's time for our next guest, Joan Goodnight. Joan is co-founder of the Powder Puffs of Orange County and of Cal Dreamin', which is one of two West Coast cross-dressing and transsexual conventions. Joan, can you hear us?
I can hear you fine.
All right. Welcome to Gender Talk, Joan.
Well, thank you very much, Nancy.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you. It's been
thank you for having me.
Oh. Just, you know, we'll see what you say at the end of the show. You know?
Well, I got one question for you already.
Oh, you okay.
Yeah, I was kind of eavesdropping on your talk. Now, is it you or Gordina's in the leathers today?
I'm in the leather. I have a little leather and lace on, Joan.
Oh, okay,
I've got
great.
A little black lace camisole and a black leather vest.
Hey, go for it.
She looks great, of course. Hey, so, yeah, they're having a fetish for a flea market. That's always a lot of fun.
Are we digressing to what are you wearing, dear?
Oh, no, we are.
Now, you know I'm a cloth queen, and I'm going to fall for that every time.
Sorry. Just shouting into the microphone. Because Hal's sitting on the other side of a window.
Hey, that's my thing, the shouting into the microphone.
So you brought chaos.
Welcome to Gender Talk, Joan.
Okay, well, thank you.
So, let's see, where should we start off? Let's talk about what's going on, what's happening out there in California. What is this Powder Puffs of Orange County, anyway?
It's an open group that we started about 12 to 13 years ago.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
And we've been going strong ever since. And in fact, we just had one of our meetings this past Saturday night.
Now, Orange County is sort of reputed to be a very conservative place. You know, Reagan and all of that kind of place. And the Powder Puffs of Orange County then is an organization of cross-dressers who are living in a very conservative area? Would you say that?
I think you could say that of the whole Southern California area. It's pretty conservative, not just Orange County.
Wow. I suppose you're right.
It's not as wide open as people are led to believe.
Yeah, you know, we're told that you know, California is this free-swinging kind of fun-loving place where anything goes. And
well, certain cities are, certain localities, but all in all, it's pretty darn conservative, and when you mix in the large Mexican culture that we have here, which is also very conservative,
That's right.
It makes for interesting times.
There's a large Latino population there, or Mexican. I don't know if...
Latino, I guess you'd call them. I don't think they like to be called Mexican people.
Is that right?
No,
I don't know. I know I hung out there with a lot of Mexicans when I was there.
It is. You know, I think both of you are touching on an important point that we see California as a liberal bastion. And we just picked up a report, Joan. I don't know if you know anything about it. West Hollywood, there were three transsexuals that were beaten severely by bat-wielding...
I had heard something about it, but I haven't been able to catch it on the local news. I don't know what happened.
It was reported in L.A. The report that we got happened yesterday. And at least one person was in Mount Sinai Medical Center for treatment of head and back injuries. Now, they did arrest all three suspects in the crime, and they are booked on suspicion of attempted murder and involvement in a hate crime.
Now,
so,
this was...
Well, they should be.
Yeah.
This was a group of kids who attacked a group of cross-dressers?
Yes,
with baseball bats,
brutally.
Was there any names of the cross-dressers given out
The information that I got had no names whatsoever. So,
the report came from Gwen Smith at AOL.
Yes.
So.
Okay, it was West Hollywood then.
Yes, West Hollywood.
Yeah.
So we were.
Well, West Hollywood is a predominantly gay community there, so.
You would have thought it'd be okay.
You'd think it'd be okay. It must have been skinheads.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know.
And we just had that attack in Providence Town.
What attack was that?
Kimberly, is her name? Kimberly Stevens was in
Providence.
Oh, Providence. Okay. I'm learning my my towns here, so excuse me.
Anyway.
Yeah, let's
move on. Let's hear some more from Joan about, you know, what she knows about that the local community there and the community that she's involved with. So Joan, Powder Puffs of Orange County, that's an open group, which means that it's open to Anybody who has gender issues or
anybody that has gender issues, that's true.
Mm.
We kind of fancy ourselves as the foreign legion of the transgenderists. You know, we don't care as long as somebody wears a dress. You know, they're welcome.
Okay, it's not.
We don't make any issues out of it.
It's not for FTMs.
Well, FTM, female to males.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're more than welcome, but we don't seem to have too big a connection with those people out here for some reason.
So your group is would be primarily.
Probably primarily male.
Okay. So you're providing this service there for. Would you say most of your membership is closeted then? Most of your membership is not sort of out about cross-dressing?
Yeah, our focus has always been on the first-timer and to provide a safe atmosphere for somebody who wants to come away from home and get into a social-type atmosphere.
Can we talk about this? Because we haven't, here on Gender Talk, Joan, I'm terribly remiss in that I don't think we've ever talked about the particular concerns of first-time cross-dressers, so what we call the first-timer, and it's very, very important. Can we talk about that a bit?
Sure.
First of all, what is a first-timer?
Somebody that has never been in a social situation while they've been cross-dressed. That's the way we define them, as a first-timer.
So somebody who may or may not have been cross-dressing at home, more often than not, probably cross-dressing in private somewhere?
Probably cross-dressing in private, and they've somehow they get on the internet or they go to the magazine stores and they pick up the periodicals and they find out about the group and they want to venture out, but they're scared too. But eventually they do, and that's been the focus of our group, is to help that first timer come out for get in a nice social situation where it's safe and protected.
Great.
That's
and
terrific.
From there on they can learn to expand their transgenderism and go on to other things.
So what do you think, so first-timers are generally somebody who's very, I remember my first time venturing out into public, although I'd done it a couple of times with girlfriends, but the first time I ever went and met other cross-dressers, I couldn't have been more scared.
Mm.
I was absolutely petrified. I felt like I was on the wrong planet, not just on a different planet, but the wrong one at that, and I felt like I had three heads or something. It was just,
that's a normal fear.
Yeah. What do you do for people, to help them overcome that fear?
What we try to do is assign them like a big sister to help them through the first meeting and to just relax and get to the point where they're going to find out nobody's going to kill them.
Great.
And nobody's going to laugh at them.
Nobody's going to laugh at them. Nobody's going to make fun.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest worry these people have when they come out is, hey, I don't pass that well, and others are there that probably will, and they'll look at me and, they'll think I'm ridiculous or something like that. We try to put those people at ease on that.
Uh-huh.
Because there's, I don't think there's too many of us that are raving beauties when you come down to it.
No, I mean.
And that's not the focus anyway.
Exactly. We should also have some modesty about that.
Yeah, that's important. When I go out on the web, and it's kind of anti-Ashley out there because the 15-year-old cross-dressers find me. But it's like, go to the support groups. Don't go to the clubs. If you're dressing for the first time, you're not going to be able to compete with the dolly queens that are spending a lot of money and a lot of time being fab.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and the support organizations are very good places for just this reason, because they will have someone there who's friendly, who knows what it's like to be a first-timer.
Now, I don't know about you folks, but I don't know what it is that it gets in the cross-dresser's mind that he's got to go out in public sometime, someplace, somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
He's
yeah.
got to be out there.
Yeah.
And my experience with some of these people is the first place they hit is a shopping mall.
Oh.
You know, before they ever come to a club, they try the shopping mall for some reason.
Yeah.
And like you say, the 15-year-old is going to pick up on them right away.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, little kids and teeny boppers and teenagers will identify you automatically.
Yeah.
And then they can make your life miserable. And that's a bad experience.
Yeah. So that you're saying that's a common experience? A lot of people have had that?
A lot of people have had that.
Yeah. So, let's see. What other... what else do you offer to somebody who's coming to the club? Let's say somebody's never been to a club. What should they expect to do at the club when they come to, you know, it's their first time cross-dressing. Okay, you're going to have somebody who's going to sort of be a big sister. That can be scary in itself. Like, what's she going to want from me and all of that? What kind of goes on at the club?
We just try to put them at ease and tell them, hey, we got a program going on here. We usually have a guest speaker or we have a demonstration of some type. We have some food and light beverages, and that's about it. And we're here socially, and afterwards, some of the people go out and they go to different clubs, and if they feel like they're ready for it, fine, go with them. If they don't, then, hey, it's okay, too. You know, it's...
And what about, you know, when somebody... typically, for a cross-dresser, they haven't had a lot of experience with clothing, makeup, wigs, or whatever, with comportment, with generally trying to make themselves look respectable or just like something human. I know the first time I went out. I just remember.
It has been a long time, hasn't it, dear?
It has been a long time. Oh, my God. I just remember looking at some of the pictures of me. I just, you know, going out there and just this wig that I have. I don't know. You know, what is, how can I, you know, do, it, are there, you know.
Well, we're not a training camp, but they can pick up by observation and see some of the other cross-dressers that have had some experience with clothing or somebody that is a pretty good dresser. And, you know, they can pick up from that.
And are people helpful in general? I mean,
if they have questions, the other people are just more, they're more than helpful. Where do I go to get this? Where do I go to get that? You know, shoes, you know.
Cool. Yeah, like size 12 shoes. Where do I go for them?
Yeah, who's a good makeup artist? And who's a good hairstylist? Things like that. So
what are the big issues that, the people, the organizers like yourself are working on these days? What are the big things that you have to confront personally?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question entirely.
What are the big issues that you have to confront in your organizing work with the transgender community? What are the biggest difficulties, obstacles that you face?
That's a tough question. I've been more on the administrative side of it now for a couple of years, so I haven't been out there, so to speak, so I really don't know what the heck the issues are.
Well, now the California Dreamin' Convention is something you help run, right?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, and I know you used to write a column for Crosstalk. Do you still write for the community?
No.
Are you done with that? You're done with that?
Yeah, I'm done with that.
Oh, Joan.
I just kind of, if something interesting happens, I'll go ahead and report on it. Now, we had a situation here a couple of weeks ago. There was a madam that was arraigned in court for running a prostitution ring.
Uh-huh.
And I couldn't help but notice that her website was caldreamin.com.
Ah! Oh, my goodness.
And I thought, oh, God, no. No, please, no. You know?
I love it.
You know, because we can get somebody interested in attending our convention, and if they should go to that website, boy, are they in for a big surprise.
Oh. Yeah, really. The convention is held where?
Every April.
Every April?
Yeah, at the end of April is when we try to hold it, first part of May.
And who goes to the convention?
Yeah, it's open to anybody that wants to come.
Okay. Why would somebody go? I mean, who's going to be... what's the person going to find when they go to the convention? Why would they, I'm trying to get at, like, who's there? I'm trying to help you sell the convention a little bit.
I know. Well, what we're going to have is we're going to have the surgeons, and we're going to have the plastic surgeons, and we're going to have the psychologists, we're going to have the self-help people, the how-to people, we're going to have the vendors, we're going to have outings.
So it's really
just a good time. What goes on at any transgender convention?
Which is really learning a lot about...
Learning a lot about yourself.
Good.
Yeah.
Which is so important.
That's the important thing.
Absolutely.
And carrying yourself from day to day and how to fit cross-dressing into your life or how to integrate it into your life?
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, an experience living in this mode for 3 or 4 days.
How long have you been cross-dressing, Joan?
Oh, probably all my life.
And
like Bill Cosby said, I started out as a child.
Ah.
Are you married?
I'm married.
And did your wife knows, I presume?
Oh, absolutely. She comes with me to these conventions.
Oh, great.
Did you tell her before you married?
She knew it before we married. This is my second marriage.
Uh-huh.
My first one, she caught me, and that was the downfall.
Oh, my goodness.
Careful notes, girls.
Yeah.
So, in other words, you married with, you didn't tell her that you were cross-dressing. You were cross-dressing in secrecy, and then your wife walked in.
I cross-dressed secretly for a number of years, a good 25, 30 years.
Wow.
She couldn't take it.
Did it just blow up right away, or did you?
Of course, the marriage was kind of headed downhill before that, and I think this was the straw that broke the camel's back.
Okay.
Mm. And then after we separated, she went and told my adult children.
Aww.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. That put a strain between us for some time.
Yeah, of course.
Because they had absolutely no idea. And
so she made you look like a big pervert to them, I'm sure.
Well, I don't know what she told them. I wasn't there, so I'm not even going to speculate. But it did take them by surprise. And after all, they knew nothing about it, and they didn't even know what it was. And then to find out their father was a cross-dresser.
Do you cross-dress a lot, Joan?
Not anymore. I used to. It's kind of gotten away from it. Well, not away from it. I don't dress, but maybe once or twice a month.
Do you think that all the political progress, all that we've done to make it less stigmatized and less wrong and bad, do you think that reduces the pleasure some?
No, I think it's helped quite a bit. I think it's helped our national community maybe not look so hard at the cross-dresser or the transsexual or whatever the person happens to be.
So that makes it a little easier to go out
I think
out
it makes it a little easier.
That's cool. That's good.
Yeah.
That's my opinion for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And it's what everyone is comfortable with, too, because sometimes we think if someone cross-dresses, they're doing it all the time, but everyone has their own frequency in terms of dressing.
Well, it comes and goes,
yeah,
too, right? I mean, I know it used to with me. Joan, do you mind talking about this stuff?
No, I like to.
Does it come and go for you?
It doesn't come and go. I don't have that urgency to cross-dress that I used to.
Okay.
That's the only way I can describe it. I used to have an urgency to do it. I think it was not denial, but deprivation.
Oh.
And now that I don't have deprivation, then I don't feel this urgency that I need to cross-dress as often.
I always felt like the prohibition increased the need.
Right. You know, you want the booze because you can't have it, but once it's legal, then big deal. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's what I keep telling people about prostitution. You know, if we legalize it, you know, maybe things will settle down a little bit and there'll be a little bit less acting out in misbehavior.
Or decriminalize even.
Yeah. And whatever.
Now in the summertime, I really cut back on it because it's just too warm.
Too darn hot.
You know, there's at IFGE,
so
the International Foundation for Gender Education, we used to joke about how, summer was a terrible time for cross-dressers because you can't, in order to cross-dress, in order to make yourself look like a woman, you've got to wear stockings that shape your legs, and you've got to wear, you know, a lot of cross-dressers wear hip pads to make their hips wider and all. And it's a lot of, you know, you might be wearing a corset of some sort or a girdle.
Or you're shaving arms and legs a lot, too.
Well, you can't do that in summertime.
No one
either
showed up to our support group in the summer.
That's right. Either you're wearing a lot and you're going to die and you can't do that, or you can't. You can't go out in the summertime because you can't cross-dress because that means you have to shave your arms and legs or whatever, and you can't do that.
Tendons is always up in the winter.
Or I'm going,
and then you start to sweat and it all runs.
Yeah, exactly. You know. That's what I was thinking.
Hey, girls, it just isn't worth it. You know?
Yeah.
Or the I'm growing my hair out on my legs for the summertime because I'm in bathing suits.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I know.
I don't bother.
So, Joan, we've got just about 2 or 3 minutes left here. I know we had sort of said we're going to talk more about the history of Powder Puffs. Is there anything that you wanted to say to people listening out there? There's certainly plenty of people on the West Coast who are listening to this or who will be. This will be heard by a bunch of people, I'm sure, in our community. You know, is there anything you would say?
Yeah. become active in your local transgender organization.
Yeah.
That's the key to the whole community. If you're not active and not supporting it, one of these days it just might go away, and then what do you got? You got to start all over again, and that's no fun.
You know, I really found when I came out in the community, the first thing I did was go to Fantasia Fair, and I found the community to be a marvelous resource and a really magical thing for me, for as long as I stayed with it, you know, until in later years in my activism and all that, I've sort of, you know, drifted away from that.
I didn't become very public with my cross-dressing until I was probably past my 50th birthday. I knew there were other cross-dressers out there, and I didn't know whether there were any organizations or not. So one day, by pure chance and pure luck, I ran across a copy of the old Virginia Prince magazine, Transvestia.
I remember that.
And in it, there was a address for the Tri-S, and it gave a Tulare post office box. So I wrote them, and I asked, where's your chapter in Orange County? And they wrote me back and said, we don't have one. Do you want to form one?
Oh, that's
great. So I investigated Tri-S, and I thought, yeah, it's a nice organization, but some of the rules were a little bit too much on the strict side.
Yeah.
So I decided if we were going to have an organization down here, we'd have one that was kind of open to everybody. So
good,
that's how Powder Puffs got formed, about 1985. Even though we actually didn't have our first meeting till 1987, it took time to find a place and make contacts with people and, you know, finally get the ball rolling. But we did in July of 1987, and we had our first meeting, and we had a great big six people there.
That's progressive. First meeting in Albuquerque, there was myself and one other person, and that lasted for the first 3 months.
Wow.
Well, the next meeting, we had about 15.
Wow.
Impressive.
Yeah, but you'd be surprised. You'd think there would be more cross-dressing organization in a city of about, you know, 10 or 11 million people. I mean, the area here.
How big?
There wasn't. There was only Alpha Chapter, Tri-S, which was out in the valley about 60 miles from here. And then there was the other organization, Chic. But they had such strict security requirements, it was hard to make contact with them.
What's the most people you've ever turned out for an event?
For a meeting? Well, we had...
Or for a convention, whatever.
For one of our regular monthly meetings, we used to average around 80 people a meeting.
Wow.
Gosh.
That's amazing.
Well,
that's
for a while, we were kind of the only game in town.
Tiffany Club, the whole time I was going to Tiffany Club here in New England, we never had anything like 80 people except for special events. That's pretty good, Joan.
And we were forced to change locations in the past few years, and now we're dwindled down to where we get about 20 or 30 people a meeting.
Things ebb and flow. Joan, we have to go. How about a contact information? How can people get a hold of Powder Puffs of Orange County? If we have any listeners in Southern California who are looking for a group, you know, get out. If you're cross-dressing, if you're in a closet, if you're feeling scared, get out. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. Trust me. I've done it. Lots of others have done it. It's the thing to do. You will thank yourself for doing it, but do it with a good support group. Joan, how can people get a hold of Powder Puffs?
They can contact us at our P.O. Box, which is P.O. Box 1088, and that's in Yorba Linda. That's two words.
Yorba Linda.
California, 92885. Address it to PPOC.
92885. Great. P.O. Box 1088, Yorba Linda, California, 92885. Address it to PPOC.
Right.
Joan,
no, that was the fastest half hour of my life.
I know. Well, we got started a little bit late, as always, but it's been a pleasure having you with us, Joan. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, it went too fast for us, too, honey. We'd love to talk more.
Well, thank you for thinking of me. I really appreciate it, Nancy.
Thank you for your work, Joan.
Yeah, Joan, we really appreciate all the work that you've done. You know, it's people like you who came before, you know, who paved the way for people like me today. So I really appreciate it. So thank you.
Well, I hope to be around a few more years anyway.
One or two at least,
sure,
right?
Sure you will.
Good, Joan. Take care. Hope to see you next time I'm in California.
Or at
Dreamin' California
sometime.
Dreamin' next April.
All right.
We're going to have a ball.
I'd love to.
Well, we just might.
Yeah.
Okay, Gordy, we'll talk about it offline, okay?
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. That does it for our program tonight, everybody. Coming up next is Dreams of a New Age. Our website, as always, is www.gendertalk.com. And for more information about any kind of transgender issues, call the International Foundation for Gender Education, who will refer you to the very best resources available. Their phone number is 781-899-2212, and they also have the most well-stocked bookstore on the subject, bar none. And a wonderful person to talk to at the bookstore in Vanessa. And now on behalf of engineer Hal Fuller, producer Karen Larson, co-host Gordine McKenzie, and myself, thanks again for listening, everyone. And remember, no matter what the occasion, gender talk is always appropriate. Good night, everybody.